The other day when we were in the house, the speaker's gavel blew apart while she was calling us to order. So yes. I think mine's constructed better. This is the March 11th, 2009 meeting of the Public Safety Budget Division in the Senate. And today we're going to hear about the federal stimulus bill and what effect it has on the various things in our budget. And members, there's quite a bit of information already at your place. And some frequently asked questions. And so as we go through here, if you have questions, feel free to ask. It isn't entirely obvious to me how much money we have, what it goes for, and when we'll get it. So I think Ms. Boisvert is going to give us as much as she knows. And so feel free to ask questions. And members of the audience who are here and maybe representing a local government or an organization, if you have questions about how this is all going to work, jot down your questions, and when Ms. Boisvert is done, and we've got some folks who are ready to give public testimony, but other questions may occur to you, and we'll have a chance for you to get up and ask those questions as well, because it's really important that we get this right. And I, for one, am a little confused at this point. So, Ms. Boisvert, welcome back to the committee. We're so glad that you're here and you're working on this project. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jerry Boisvert, and I'm the Director of the Office of Justice Programs in the Department of Public Safety. Excuse me. I'm here today to review the American Recovery Act funds that will be coming to the state of Minnesota to address public safety issues. As you can imagine, our federal partners are scrambling to get us guidance every minute or so on how to apply for and use these funds, and I'm here to share what we know to date. I have given you two handouts. One is just my talking points that you'll have a copy of. You also have a copy of the local agencies that are going to receive JAG funds direct. And then there's a third handout that actually lists competitive funds at the federal level, which people will have to apply directly for. And I'll go through each of those. So I'll start with the overview. The stated purpose of the Recovery Act is to preserve and create jobs and promote economic recovery. Our general guidance from the Federal Office of Management and Budget directs recipients of the Recovery Act funds to administer the funds with unprecedented transparency and accountability, award funds in a prompt, fair, and reasonable manner, ensure that the recipients and uses of funds are transparent to the public, ensure that the benefits are reported clearly, accurately, and in a timely manner, ensure that the funds are used for authorized purpose areas, ensure that program goals are achieved, including the goals of the broader economic indicators. The state of Minnesota will receive over $32 million through the Federal Office of Justice Programs stimulus funding package through three formula grant programs. The first is the Byrne Justice Assistance Grant Program, the JAG program, and the amount that's coming to Minnesota is $29,157,427. 40% of that amount, or $11,057,510, will be awarded directly to the cities and counties. And you have the list of those recipients, I think, in the packet. 60% of that award, or $18,099,917, will be awarded to the state, to OJP, to distribute. We're also going to get over $1.2 million in Victims of Crime Act funds, and about $2.3 million in Violence Against Women Act funds for the STOP program. So I'll go over each of the programs in a little more detail for you at this point. The Department of Public Safety, OJP, will administer the JAG state share, the VAWA, and the VOCA funds. The Justice Assistance Grant Program is, the goal is to reduce or prevent crime by providing support to all components of the criminal justice system. JAG projects may address crime through the provision of direct services or by providing effectiveness and efficiency methods for criminal and juvenile justice systems, processes, and procedures. JAG funds can be used for state and local initiatives, technical assistance, training, personnel, equipment, supplies, contractual support, information systems, and evaluation that will improve and enhance programs in the authorized purpose area. The funding requirements thus far, again, I say the state is going to get $18,099,917. We can use up to 10% of that for administrative purposes. And 65.72% of the balance needs to be passed through to local entities, and that's about $10,700,000. The non-pass-through amount, which can be used for state initiatives or local initiatives, is $5.5 million. These funds are available for up to 4 years. The 4 years begins 10-108 and ends 9-30-12. J can be used for law enforcement, prosecution in court, prevention and education, corrections, community corrections, drug treatment for offenders, planning, evaluation, and technology, and crime victim programs other than compensation. It's our plan to issue a competitive RFP across all the purpose areas, have the programs externally reviewed, and award 2-year grants. The special conditions for these funds are no supplant. And supplant is defined by the feds as you can't replace state or local funds that have been appropriated or allocated for the same purpose. They're loosely defined. They're trying their best to define this broadly this year. So if something was cut in 09, it's certainly eligible for funding. And if it's on the chopping block for 2010, it is also looks like it's going to be deemed as okay, but that's been one of the big questions about the funds. There's going to be significant special reporting provisions. The grantees need to employ best or evidence-based practices, and the goal of JAG is to improve or reform the criminal and juvenile justice system. The Victim of Crime Act funds are VOCA funds. The purpose of these funds is to provide direct services to victims of crime. OJP is going to get $368,897 for compensation payments to victims of a violent crime and $845,000 for direct services to victims of crime. The funding requirements here, we can use up to 5% for admin, and these funds are available for 3 years, starting 10-108. The compensation funds will be used to cover lost wages and loss of support for victims of violent crime. The direct services fund will be integrated into our annual crime victim services application process, as we will have a reduction of about $963,000 from last year due to one-time funding. These funds can be used in this manner because it has been a cut. Again, the special conditions are no supplant, and again, they'll have special reporting provisions. The Violence Against Women Act funds support the STOP program, services training officers. It promotes a coordinated multidisciplinary approach to improving the criminal justice system response to violent crimes against women. The STOP program encourages the development and strengthening of effective law enforcement and prosecution strategies to address violent crimes. The funding requirements under VAWA are up to 10% for administration. 30% of the funds are to be used for direct services to strengthen, expand, and improve services, 25% for law enforcement, 25% for prosecution, 15% for American Indian programs, and 5% for courts. This funding only has a 24-month window, and they're starting the clock May 1st, so the time period is quite short for these grant awards. It'll be 5-1 through 4-30. Applicants must address one or more of the 14 STOP program designated purpose areas, which I didn't provide for you here, but I'll be happy to provide to you. We are proposing a competitive process across all 14 purpose areas, and again, no supplant. Matches required for these funds, but we are applying for a state waiver, so we don't have to provide the match. They're encouraging us to do that this year. And again, there'll be special reporting provisions. I just wanted to point out one of the competitive, there's a listing of competitive grants, it's a two-pager, that are available now on the federal website, and you apply directly for them. I had been asked, are there funds available for mentoring programs? And the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention will be providing funding for mentoring programs, and that's one area that will be available. Right now, OJP is applying for all these programs hurriedly, developing specialized reporting forms for each of the programs, and getting the information out to our criminal justice partners, and fielding tons of calls, particularly from local JAG recipients who've never received direct funding anymore, so we're trying to assist them with those applications. Given the spirit of the Act and the timelines, on particularly on the VAWA fund, we hope to have the request for proposals posted by April 15th. I'm happy to answer questions you might have and certainly provide you any information as we get more.
Okay, questions at this point? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this report here. One question I have is where you started under the burn grants there, the four-year available for 4 years. So to understand this, you're going to apply for these dollars, all of these dollars now? I mean, we have 4 years to spend this. Is that what that means? And we can spend it the first year if we want to, or do we have to spread it out over a period of time?
Ms. Bouvier.
Madam Chair, Senator, we apply for the funds all now. We're required to apply for all the funds and put it in an interest-bearing account. Our goal to be in the spirit of the Recovery Act is to do two-year awards and try to spend all the money in that two-year period.
Senator?
Good.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, I'm not finding the cities and counties that are getting the 40%. Am I missing?
It's this page.
Is there an extra one, sir? Thank you.
Where is it? Maybe.
And then, let's see. I have a question also about the 65.72% pass-through to local entities. How do we do that? Do they apply to you, or how does that work?
Ms. Bouvier?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, what we would put out is a full request for proposals, and what we do is monitor and ensure that 65.72% of the funds are actually passed through to local entities.
And then, Madam Chair, in terms of the non-pass-through, you said that it could be spent by the state on state expenditures or for local expenditures. So do we know how the plans for that money yet?
Ms. Boyer.
Madam Chair and Senator, at this point in time, we're proposing an open and competitive application for both state and local entities to apply.
The Madam Chair, the final question is do we know if we're going to hold back the all the 10% that's allowable for administration?
Ms. Bouvier.
Madam Chair, Senator, we're proposing that we hold back the full 10% and spend it over a three-year period.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any funding available in this for the Adam Walsh Act?
Madam Chair, there's no funds specifically designated to comply with it. One could make application for those funds, but there's no funds designated in this act.
And would that be through which of these grants would be most appropriate?
Madam Chair, the JAG grant would be the most appropriate.
Senator Watt.
Madam Chair, sorry, I had one last question. In terms of the special conditions for the JAG grant, you mentioned that any cuts that were made in 2009 would be eligible, and any potential cuts in 2010 may be eligible in terms of the definition of supplant. Is that the anticipated one-time appropriations that we're making? So, in the past when we've done one-time funding, we know for a certainty that will be finished, as opposed to things that are kind of in the base budget where as we're eliminating the base budget, some of those things will have to go. So when will we know exactly what qualifies? And then can you clarify whether or not those are the factors that are going to be considered?
Ms. Bouvier.
Madam Chair, Senator, at this point in time, the guidance that we're receiving from BJA is both of those instances would be allowable.
Really?
But the timing, of course, is crucial. If we have the application out by April 15th and decisions made on the JAG funds sometime in June, so the timing is an important factor.
Senator Ma?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess that's a huge hole around the no supplanting. I mean, I would think that the one time may be, but it will be interesting once the regs come out, because, if that's what it is for this, I would be interested in knowing then what is no supplanting.
Yeah, I think the beauty's in the definitions in the eye of the beholder, I think, most of the time. But we'll have to watch that, I think, very carefully to see what that actually is. We had a lot of projects that we funded in this division 2 years ago that we thought were wonderful, but they ended up being one-time money. And so I'm assuming all of those would automatically be available for funding through here. We had some great mentoring programs. We had, you know, some work with ex-offenders, you know, that we really wanted to fund over several years, and we ended up with one-time money. So that would be one place for them to, you know, to make a good application. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bovier, could you please explain a little bit more the drug treatment program for offenders? And is it a program that has to already be in place, or is it something that has to be in a prison, a lockdown situation?
Ms.
Or going to be working with offenders that are have done their time and are still?
Madam Chair, Senator, the guidance on this, on drug treatment for offenders, is not closely defined at this point. It used to be just defined as in prison or in jail. Mm-hmm. At this time, community-based treatment for offenders, I think, would be an allowable purpose area.
So people who were out on probation.
The only thing I might add to that is that startups may be problematic just because of the short period of time. People have to be up and running within 60 days, and they have to be operational. And then you add the spirit of the act to hire quickly. So I think a startup may be difficult.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Ms. Bovier, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to continue that conversation about the those meth treatment programs that have been eliminated in the governor's Health and Human Services budget. Those are programs, especially the Anoka and the one in Fairmont, that are up and running and with some great successes. I'm not sure if those fit under your parameters or guidelines, but I would like to talk to you further about something like that, because they have been eliminated.
There you go. Ms. Bovier?
Madam Chair, Senator, they appear to be eligible applicants under these funds at this time.
Really?
There you go.
I'm so glad I came.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bovier, who makes the decisions? Is there a committee of individuals out of your office that it's the usual grant process, basically, that people go through?
Ms. Bovier.
Madam Chair, Senator, what we'll do with this, right, we'll have a competitive grants process with an external review by experts in the field and community members to help us make those decisions.
Are you going to sometimes in competitive grants, the idea is to get money out to a lot of organizations, and so then they get smaller size grants versus, you know, focusing the money on a few larger grant ideas. Have you had any thoughts about how you're thinking along those lines?
Madam Chair, we've discussed having a range of grants from between $50,000 and $300,000. And to ensure that we look at geographic distribution as well of these funds.
Senator Foley, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Can anybody explain who made these divisions for the cities and counties, and how was the amount determined? Because there are wide ranges in there, $80,000 to $29,000 and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Senator, that they are based on a formula. The whole JAG program, and I don't have the exact formula on me, but what they do is they use population and Part 1 crime rates to determine eligibility for amounts of funding. So there is a broad range of funding based on crime rate and population.
Ms. Bovier, I can't find either Hennepin or Ramsey County on this list. Is that... Are they just not there, or am I missing them?
Madam Chair, they have a large amount.
I see Minneapolis, but I can't see Hennepin.
Hennepin is in the first.
Oh, there it is, right above. Okay, got it. I'm sorry. And that's a very small amount. Hennepin, for example.
Madam Chair, those that are shaded are considered to be part of a disparate county. So the cities and the counties that are shaded have to get together, make one application, and determine how to use those funds among themselves for the needs of the larger area.
I make it too easy.
So do the the cities in Hennepin, for example, they would all get together, or would it be like Bloomington and Hennepin County and Richfield and Hennepin County? Or were you thinking that this whole collection, the collection of them all get together for one grant?
Madam Chair, they're required to all get together and apply under one MOU directly to the feds.
That could be interesting.
Is there a place in this process for the legislature? Either in, Senator Rosen's obvious interest is the meth treatment programs. I've got some obvious interest in some things. Is there a place for us to be involved?
Madam Chair, the guidance on the process is really for us to look at the fairest way to distribute the funds and then to rely on best practices, and these have been competitive grant processes. We would certainly welcome reviewers or any ideas that you might have.
That's a gentle no, Madam Chair.
Stay out of our business, yeah. I think.
Thanks for trying, but we get it.
Okay, are there any other questions at this point while I move on, as I'm embarrassed? Okay, Ms. Boisvert, would you stay at the table? Because we have people on the agenda to testify, and they might have questions for you. You may as well just stay right there. Would that be all right?
Happy to, Madam Chair.
Okay, Mr. Thomas from the network, why don't we start out with you? Okay. And I think we have told all the organizations that you get one testifier per organization. So,
yes. That's here. Madam Chair, hi. Steve Thomas, I'm the President and CEO of the Network for Better Futures, and I assure you McCraw won't say anything, but he's much more knowledgeable than I. So if there are any questions, he can help.
Like,
but this is McCraw
El-Amin,
one of my colleagues.
Were you here yesterday? Were you here yesterday?
Actually, I was not.
Shoot. I thought. Being here for two days in a row is a good thing. I saw a lot of your friends and neighbors, though. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you for several minutes here to offer some insights. Just to refresh, we had the great opportunity to speak to the committee 2 months ago, but just to refresh people, the network is reducing the economic and social cost of high-risk ex-offenders, primarily African-American men, with histories of incarceration, substance abuse, mental illness, chronic unemployment, and homelessness. And this ambitious endeavor was created and is being sponsored by a team of Minnesota's leading healthcare, housing, workforce, community corrections, and human service practitioners. A core feature of our enterprise is Better Futures. It's the network's business enterprise that creates jobs for the men and provides immediate short-term work for our participants, and it also generates earned income. We have emerging evidence that the network is a proven means for reducing state spending, creating new jobs, and achieving much better results for a high-risk group of expensive consumers of public services. We do not receive JAG or BURN funds right now, and we're just now becoming familiar with this endeavor. But in the brief time that we've taken to study it and talk with staff, as I said earlier, we believe the current economic crisis and this one-time stimulus money and provides the office and the legislature an opportunity to be inventive and creative. And a couple things to keep in mind. As you know, the funding for our endeavor, for instance, ends on June 30th. So we would welcome an opportunity to compete for these funds. And it's an option to consider for continuing an endeavor like ours. A couple things to keep in mind, perhaps, both for the office and for the legislature. One idea, perhaps, is to consider carving out a portion of these funds to support demonstrations like ours and others that are committed to building the alternative, the next generation of both public safety and community development endeavors that are going to be needed to reengage high-risk groups of adults back into the community to ensure that we target some of these funds so that we start building the alternatives for controlling cost and reducing state spending over the long term. That's one idea. Another is to reconsider the traditional funding caps that have been placed on applicants I believe mentioned it was typically 50 to 300,000 range. But if you truly want to fuel enterprises that are going to build the next generation of product that's going to help control and reduce spending, capital is critical, especially in the early years. And again, perhaps having a carve out where the caps are higher, and perhaps the expectation, and not perhaps, the expectations are higher. So, for instance, I would recommend if you do a carve-out for demonstrations, have a higher funding cap, you don't just use that. You don't just automatically grant the money. You pay out the money as certain outcomes are achieved. And only if you meet those outcomes are you paid the funds that were committed. So those are some examples, some ideas to think about as we look at this money. I think, you know, an endeavor like ours matches up nicely to the criteria that were just laid out. First of all, we have a 12-month track record. We've already served over 250 men in the first 14 months of performance. We are the kind of reform initiative that this kind of money is seeking and wants at the table. We're built on best practices, proven practices. Our entire model is drawn from documented practices and techniques that have been documented to reduce crime, protect public safety, create jobs, and increase child support payments. I can go down the list. And then I think part of the, and specifically the stimulus package is meant to create jobs, and that's what we're doing with part of our endeavor. And then lastly, because we are up and running, we are positioned to quickly absorb and deliver on the expectations of this money. So those are some thoughts and ideas for both the Office of Justice Programs and for your committee to take into consideration as you deliberate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Appreciate you both being here. Ms. Lewis from Biggs. I suppose I should say BBBS.
You may say whatever you want. Well, first, let me say thank you to our Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, and to all the senators who are here. I have a very special thank you from Big Brothers Big Sisters because we have some 475 young people who want to say thank you for the dollars that we have received from the state for our Mentoring Children of Prisoners program. I am absolutely amazed by the stimulus package because of what it can do and because it is about prevention. I'm here to talk to you about preventing young people from going to prison, and there are a couple of things I want to share with you about that. First of all, from a cost-saving perspective, and many of you already know this, but I'll say it again because it's something I think we need to keep hearing. It costs the state of Minnesota $40,000 for a juvenile to be in the juvenile justice system or in the correction system. It costs us $1,400 to mentor a child. You can do the math. The second thing I want you to know, which I think is just an amazing report, the Wilder Foundation last year did a report on mentoring because, you know, everybody wants to know, what do we get for our dollar? If, you know, this mentoring thing is, it's not just fluff. It's not less, you know, huggy-kissy. It's real. The return on for every dollar that you put into mentoring, you get $2.72 return on that dollar. You also get a child who is going to turn into a productive and active citizen who knows how to give back. So I thank you for the dollars that we have received, but I tell you that we have a waiting list. And the thing that I think you also need to know, that any child who has a parent or parents who have been incarcerated or a very close relative that they have a relationship with, they have a 70% chance of being incarcerated as well. Our goal at Big Brothers Big Sisters is to prevent this. We all know that it takes a while to see how prevention dollars work, but it works every day for us, and we see it. We also are very proud to say that any child who is mentored through Big Brothers Big Sisters has one of the greatest opportunities that any of us could think of, and that is to have a free college education. I am waiting for the day that we send our first mentoring children of prisoners, littles, to college. And I got about five in the queue right now. And it's not going to cost you anything. But what it is going to provide for the state of Minnesota. Because we know that our young people come back here, they work, they become productive citizens, and then they become big brothers and big sisters again. So the cycle goes on. I want to refer to an article. I think most of you received it. It was recently published in the Pioneer Press. It's an article about what this means to young people who are being mentored. So a couple of things I want to share with you from that article. And one of them, I want you to pay particular attention because some of you are named in this article, so you gave us some great quotes, and I want to thank you for that. But I also want to say to you, I want to tell you about a father. One of the things that we do at Big Brothers Big Sisters, with the dollars that we receive, we go into the prisons. We're not, you know, we're not scared. I got women that go in there. It's a little eerie when they lock that gate behind you. You do realize that this is not where you want to go. However, we are able to go in, talk to the women, the mothers, talk to the fathers, and you know what they're doing now? When they get their phone call, they're calling Big Brothers Big Sisters, and they are saying, I want my child to have one of those big brothers you all talking about. So if you refer to the article, and this is from one of our fathers, we had made a visit to the particular prison where he is incarcerated. He says, I found out about it and thought it would be a good idea for my son. Since this was in the paper, I can use his name. Luis LeBron, 34, in an interview from Stillwater Prison, where we visit, he says, I knew how I grew up. I grew up with a father in prison, and I really don't want that for my son. Yeah, I'm a bit jealous, he added, but my son, when he comes to visit me, speaks very highly of Mike, and I really want to thank him, Mike is a big brother, for what he is doing from the bottom of my heart. I screwed up, said LeBron, who is expected to be released in about a year, and maybe he'll end up with Steve and the network, and we'll do some more work together. He's saying, I know that I want the best for my son. And he said, I was born when my father was in prison. We don't want this cycle to keep going on. And the thing about it is, we have data. We can bring you all the data. We can fill that table with all the data that we have on the results that we get from mentoring. So I'm excited about the stimulus package. We need to be involved in the stimulus package and receive these dollars. We need to help shut some prisons down because I don't want our kids to fill them up. And we need more fathers and mothers to call us. And the thing about it is, we have the kids. We have the capability. We have the will. We have the incredible citizens of Minnesota who volunteer. None of our big brothers, big sisters get paid. They get paid back in what happens to this child. This is a small cost to change a life. So I want to thank you. I want to ask that we receive some of those dollars too. I'm bold. I don't care. You know it. I need it. But it's for my kids. They're all my kids. And I feel about each one of them as I love each one of them. It's amazing. This is work. But it is work when you're changing lives. It is a different kind of work. So I'm hoping that you will look at us as a branded, credible, researched, and documented organization that can help change lives. And thank you again.
Thank you. We have one of the biggest fans in Mr. Rosario at the Pipe Press. He just thinks the world of the Big Brothers and Big Sisters and
yes.
the work that you guys do. So,
yes, thank you.
Keep talking to him.
We will. Yeah? We will. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Ms. Lewis? Thank you so much. Mr. Beatty from YPA.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Beatty, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Youth Intervention Programs Association, and I'm here representing a number of organizations from around the state of Minnesota that receive youth intervention funding. Currently, there's 66 organizations that that are providing early intervention services across the state. And as the chair mentioned a little earlier, a couple years ago, we had a bill. Of course, we've got a goal, and you're getting a brochure right now, and if you open it up, you'll see a map in there. But we have a goal to make sure that every community in the state has an early intervention program so that every youth has the opportunity to receive early intervention services when they're starting to get in trouble. And a couple years ago, we had a bill that asked for $2 million that we hope would get us towards that goal. We believe that it's going to take about $6 million a year to actually fund enough programs or create enough programs that would cover the state. But that what happened with that bill is right at the end of the session, it ended up being one-time money because of the TAILS issues. So right now we're looking at least in the governor's proposal, losing about $750,000. It's the current amount is $2.4 million a year, so we're potentially looking at losing $750,000 a year if the governor's proposal sticks. So today I came here more as a learning thing, because I wasn't really sure what the stimulus bill was going to provide or what it was going to do and how it would even work. But I guess from my perspective, if there's some way that we can get some of this money to keep these programs funded, it would go a long ways. I can give you all sorts of statistics. Similar to the Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the mentoring program, we actually had the Wilder Research and the University of Minnesota do a social return on investment study at the same time as the mentoring programs, and ours came out to closer to $5 return for every dollar invested. There's other economic, there's economists from Vanderbilt University that calculates for every one youth that ends up dropping out of school, taking up a life of crime and drugs, costs taxpayers about $2 million over the lifetime of that youth. So, I mean, you can do the math. You know that it really does save money in the long run. We know that we've had about a 90% success rate over the 30 years that this program's been in operation of keeping kids from further involvement in the juvenile justice system. So we really do know it's saving money, and I think it's really an opportunity with this stimulus money to do some reform. And I think we know that, you know, and I know that corrections and public safety and all those folks are hurting. They need the money. But somewhere along the line, I'm hoping that the state really does start putting some additional funding into early intervention, because we do know that in the long run, we're going to keep kids out of that system, and we are going to save the state millions of dollars if we can just get those kids when they're first starting to get in trouble. And so I really hope that there's a chance here for the youth intervention program to receive some of this money. I don't know if this is the particular time to reach our goal of $6 million a year, but if there's any way that we can keep from being cut, as the governor's proposing, that would go a long way right now. If there's other additional funding, that would be great. I know I've talked to Ms. Boisevere about, is there a way for this to work out for us? The problem with some of these brine grants is that these individual organizations would probably have to apply for them individually, and the youth intervention program is actually intended to be an ongoing operating support funding for these organizations with $2 for every dollar they get from of community funding for every dollar they get from the state. So I don't know if there's a way of working that out. We hope there is, but I really do hope the legislature and the Department of Public Safety can work out a way that some of this funding could be used for youth intervention programs.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Beattie?
Thank you.
Great, thanks. Mr. Nguyen from Emerge.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm glad to be back here today. I want to thank you for the opportunity. I'm Mike Nguyen, and I'm the Executive Director of Emerge Community Development in Minneapolis. And we're a nonprofit based in North Minneapolis, just up the street from Senator Higgins' residence. And we're focused on workforce development, community wealth creation, and we have very uniquely targeted job and support services resources for high-need ex-offenders. I wanted to bring to your attention a report on the work of Emerge on a particular state-funded project over the last, it's 17 months now, and we have some data this year about 15 months. It's a little bittersweet to be here because on one hand, I'm really pleased to talk about progress and some of the things that we're able to accomplish utilizing state funds. But similarly to what's been mentioned, we have funding through June 30th, and we recognize that this is an unprecedented time of resource shortages. But we're also very excited to hear about the potential of new monies through recovery dollars. And we believe we have a strategy that's saving our state in the range of hundreds of thousands of dollars so far with this project, and perhaps even millions, and with a relatively small $200,000 investment up front. To give you some details on that, in the first 15 months of the project, we engaged 212 state offenders, and through that period, 69 secured full-time jobs. We've also leveraged a whole set of other sources, including local government, United Way, and foundation dollars that have further allowed us to work with 446 offenders, and 131 total have gotten jobs at 80 different employers in our region. We think that's very significant. And within that, we're aware that only 23 been reincarcerated, 20 of which were on technical violations. So in that, only three known reoffenses. Our statistical review of this is not complete. We're not complete with a pilot project, but we are without question showing a reduction in recidivism. If you compare it to annual costs that range $38,000 to $40,000, that's 5.2 offenders that we need an annual cost that we're deferring, and we think we're doing a lot better than that. In fact, I believe we can prove that we are. We're compelled today and right now to find a way to keep this project moving, and so our work is really not done, and we see excellent opportunities with federal dollars, potentially JAG funding or competitive second chance reentry dollars, which I know we're not here to talk about today, but is also another source that has been issued recently, and this is something that we avail ourselves to work with the legislature and state staff to pursue a joint strategy around that. It's our observation that Minnesota is uniquely positioned in that we have a work plan and we have an implementation of a comprehensive reentry strategy, and we also have emerging projects on the ground, the ones that we've heard about here today. I want to leave one other thought about a recommendation about what we could be doing, and Mr. Thomas from the network mentioned the use of transitional jobs as a strategy, and this is a best practice model, and we're doing this at Emerge with our StreetWorks project, and the network is also employing the model. There are great examples of this in New York City, Center for Employment Opportunities, the DOE Fund, Chrysalis Works in Los Angeles, which our street works is patterned after, and Oakland Green Jobs Corps, just to name a few strategies around the country who are successfully doing this. And in recent conversations we've had with the National Transitional Jobs Network, they're advising states and CBOs to come together and to pursue these funds for such a strategy. Given the current state of the labor market situation and our state's readiness to secure such funds, this is a strategy that it seems we have an opportunity to utilize. I want to be cognizant of time and close by saying that our work isn't done, and we look forward to working with you, and we appreciate all of your efforts, Madam Chair and committee, to find solutions here. And we're here to support that effort, and we want to continue this work on the ground because it is so essential and it is cost-effective for our state.
Thank you. Thank you for all the good work that you and all your folks are doing.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay. Thanks a lot. Well, Ms. Dunn from Ms. Mincasa, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to return and talk about the work that we are doing and the potential impact of the stimulus package on services for sexual assault victim survivors. My name is Donna Dunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And as such, I represent 70 member programs that serve all but 13 of Minnesota's counties with 24-hour-a-day services for survivors of sexual violence. Well, there are two things. I'm going to be brief, but there are two things on MnCASA's 2009 legislative action agenda that would qualify WESI for funding under the federal stimulus package. And actually, Ms. Bouvier already spoke to one of them. But certainly, we are always concerned about the health of the sexual assault grant program. And this is about ensuring stable services for victims and survivors of sexual violence across Minnesota. As you will recall, we reviewed this program, what the services are that we provide, the kind of success that we have, when one of our member programs testified to earlier this session. Chris Coles, who is the director of the Good Hugh Wabasha Sexual Assault Services, came and spoke with you about how the increase that we had received in the last biennium had supported her ability to keep her volunteer program sustainable and effective. So that it enhanced her ability to serve the community, since she has only about, I think, two staff people to cover the two counties. Well, she spoke really eloquently about how this increase had helped their program. And while the governor did not recommend reducing the base funding for these grants, these sexual assault program grants, in his budget, the governor's budget proposal did not add the one-time funding, as we all know, that's why we are all here, that the legislature approved in the 2007 to the base. The federal stimulus package funding, particularly that funding that's available through the VOCA increase, can be used to avert this reduction in program grants by providing some bridge funding for the next biennium. And at that time, we would hope that the legislature might consider adding the increase approved in 2007 at that time to the base funding. But certainly the stimulus amount can help bridge that gap. Cindy Cook is the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women. She and I had a conversation about this strategy, and we concur with Ms. Bouvier and the plans that OJP is advancing about using that VOCA infusion to help bridge the gap in the one-time money that we appear to be losing. The second initiative that I would speak to is the sexual violence prevention demonstration grants. Currently, there is not a similar funding mechanism or system in place to comparable to the advocacy services grant program to address primary prevention at the local level. Well, Senate File 1200, which was introduced by Senator Pappas and is also co-authored by Senator Higgins, proposes a two-year pilot project to develop, implement, and evaluate a community-based primary prevention program modeled on MnCASA's nationally acclaimed, nationally recognized SMART team model. Well, the purpose for this demonstration project grant program would be to develop and evaluate an appropriate structure for future state investments to address sexual violence in the context of this being a public health issue. Well, the demonstration grant initiative that's housed in that's identified in Senate File 1200 was proposed for funding through the state general fund. We will probably be, and we would like to be, one of those groups of people in line for burn grant funding, because we see that this could be a pilot initiative that could meet the guidelines laid out in the federal stimulus package for the burn grant funding. And so we see that that's one direction that we might be able to go with this windfall of funding through the burn grants. Well, we will continue to work with the Department of Public Safety and the Office of Justice Programs to discuss how these upcoming one-time funding initiatives might assist programs as they develop and build their and enhance their capacity as they work to stimulate the economy in their communities, and then as they always stay committed to providing safety and security for survivors. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Dunn? I'm so glad that you all are working and thinking about options that we have before us, because some of our options that we've had in previous years are not very available to us this year. I will open it up to members of the audience who we had some kind of initial inquiries by some folks and didn't have confirmations on whether they wanted to speak, or maybe as people were testifying you had questions that you would like to have addressed. If so, if you'd like to come to the table, that would be fine. We have a few more minutes for our committee meeting before we go. Welcome. If you'd start with your name and your organization, please.
My name is Lenny Chisholm. I have an organization called Springboard Economic Development Corporation. What brings me here today is I want to bring light to the glaring fact that in my community, which is North Minneapolis and across the country, African-American communities, we have a unique strategy that works. And it continues to work, but it also leaves our community barren. And that strategy is everybody in our community hates that black address. And there's a high cost most times for staying in that black address. And now what we are seeing as a result of the foreclosures is that cost has went up even more. As we're looking at opportunities and ways to use the various dollars, as I hear in the room, one of the things we have to address is how do we attract people back to that community, and it's not just with reentry programs. We have to look at ways to improve the feelings of the young people that are still left there and have them want to return, as kids do in Burnsville and Eden Prairie and the likes of those communities. I had a conversation with a gentleman recently, and he asked me, he said, what does that mean? I said, well, you grew up here in Burnsville, you went off to college, you came back, created your company in Burnsville, and now your kids are attending Burnsville Public Schools. That does not usually happen in our community. So as a result, we're left with the lower one-third of our communities. And then we have individuals who come to our communities, and they will get jobs in our communities, but they will not become residents of our communities. That is a sincere problem. If a person makes $190,000 a year, and then they take that job and they move it to Minnetonka at the end of the day at 5 o'clock, we have does not increase the likelihood that we will not have crime in our community. That person isn't spending any of the dollars in our community. As we look at ways to use these dollars that come from the stimulus package, as I looked at the JAG part of it, there is different ways, and we need to think outside the box so that we can attract the A troops to stay within our communities. Because currently, as I was at the University of Minnesota with the black student group, they are continually thinking that they want to leave, whether it's here in Minneapolis or in Chicago. Upon graduation, they want to vacate. They want to move off to the suburbs because they say there's too many ills in our communities. We have to look at various ways to cure those ills. It starts with job creation, but it also starts with the quality of life. And that may be one of the key factors in how we use these stimulus dollars. Because in the years I've been here in Minnesota, 20 years, I've never quite seen an effort put forward to creating jobs. But that's because a lot of people don't want to go to those black addresses, which is often associated with poverty. And I hope as we look at ways to use these stimulus dollars, we look at that as an avenue of making those black addresses an attractive part of the Minnesota environment.
Thank you for coming today. Any questions for Mr. Chisholm? Anybody else in the audience want to talk to us today about the stimulus package and the Bern JAG funds or the VOCA or VAWA funds? All right, stay tuned. We'll expect some updates from you as you go forward, and I know that we probably all have ideas for you, and you'll probably hear from most of us. Senator Moore, last point.
Madam Chair, I was just looking at our budget books and the Office of Justice Programs and the proposal that's in the governor's budget, and I'm intrigued by the administrative dollars that are allowed in all these different categories, and I'm wondering if not now or at some point, Ms. Beauvais, if you could, or if you have the answer now, if you could tell me if you held back all the allowable percentages on the administrative fees for administering all the federal stimulus dollars, does that help to take care of the potential shortfall that you're facing in terms of the FTE cuts that you were looking at?
Ms. Beauvais?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think I would have to think more about about that. I don't think we're able with our current staffing capacity to manage the amount of grants we're going to get. But let me map it out. Let me think more about it, and I'll get back to you.
I'd be interested in that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any last points? Thank you all very much. We're adjourned.